It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard around the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host, Mark Young. And I think movies may be on your mind today. Is that right?
Well, Chuck, Blunt Force Truth may be made in America and heard around the world, but it would appear that Terminator Dark Fate may not be so heard around the world as they anticipate.
You know, I haven't seen the Terminator yet, not the last one.
Well, you know, Arnold has made a pretty hard turn to the left in general, hasn't he?
Well, Arnold is what would you call him? He's kind of a European middle-of-the-roader, which is leans towards socialism. I mean, I've known Arnold a long time. He's not a Republican, that's for sure.
He ran for governor as a Republican, but...
Yeah, but he never was. Not really.
So the new Terminator movie, Dark Fate, by all standards, is bombing at the box office. The movie cost $196 million to make.
Yeah, Hollywood is creating what they think is the image of the world, which they think they are the image of the world. And so they recreate themselves in all of these movies. And men are just a thing of the past. We're not brave, and we're not forthcoming, and we don't protect people, and we're not strong anymore. We're all pajama boys. It's amazing to me how they try to put this off on the American public and think they're going to buy it. Because, well, not only the American public, the European as well, because their big markets are also in Europe. But if you look at television today and some of the series, and you talk about this movie, they've transplanted all the men heroes with now women heroes. And, you know, women are as strong as men. Women can do anything men can do and do it better. And it's just a jumble of cultural mistakes one after another, and no one's buying it. I really don't know how Hollywood's making their money other on Amazon and Prime and
popcorn.
Netflix. Popcorn and Cokes. I mean, it's just amazing to me why they think this is a proven winning strategy when, in fact, it's very, very political. Well, of course, they've always been political, but now it's just amazing how they're trying to turn the world on its head and force feed us all of these political ideas that they're basically feminist, feminazis, as Rush would say. I mean, their ideas, anti-men, anti-white men, it just goes on. You go down the list, and every movie really kind of depicts all of this stuff. Children are smarter than their fathers. I mean, it's just amazing.
So in this movie, by the way, you just reminded me of something. I'll get back to the movie in a second. Have you seen the Fox television show yet called Prodigal Son?
I have not.
So in the movie, or in the TV series, there's this white, brilliant doctor who's a serial killer. And she's talking to him, and he goes, "Well, I've been taking advantage of society for years." And she goes, "You mean because you're a serial killer?" And he laughs and looks at the camera and goes, "Well, no, I'm a white male." It was very tongue-in-cheek. You know, you could tell that he wasn't being serious.
Yeah.
But anyways, back to the movie. $196 million to produce it, $470 million including the marketing cost. They need to gross $470 million to break even.
Yeah.
You know from your days in Hollywood, opening week, that opening weekend is the make it or break it.
That's right.
They did $27 million this weekend.
Well, you know, it doesn't seem to matter to them because, when was the last big hit? What was the last big hit? The next big hit, I assume, is going to be Scorsese's The Irishman. They've been promoting this forever and ever. And then they got a World War II movie that's coming out, which is the midway all over again. We've already seen this like three times. They keep repeating themselves, thinking that people are going to buy repeats, remakes with different casts and maybe a different slant on the story. And it's just the same garbage coming out of Hollywood all the time. It's depressing. It's a cultural divide. They live in a cultural divide. The rest of America doesn't see the world like they see the world. I mean, I'll give you an example of something. There's a television series that you may or may not have seen called This Is Us.
I've not seen it.
Supposedly. Yeah, well, this is everybody. This is who we are as Americans. It is the most dysfunctional group of people on Earth. So they feel like if Hollywood is dysfunctional, which it is, and most of the people out there are pretty dysfunctional, which they are, then the rest of the world must be as dysfunctional as we are. And that's what we're going to portray and call it This Is Us. And quite frankly, we're not that dysfunctional as they would like to believe.
Well, but, in this movie, if I understand, so remember Arnold is the Terminator, right?
Arnold was the Terminator. Is he still the Terminator?
He is still the Terminator or a Terminator. In this movie...
So he's a robot. So he is a robot.
But in this movie, he becomes a woke robot.
Of course he does.
He becomes a woke robot who moves to some rural area and opens up a drapery business.
Well, that really makes sense.
So
I can see Arnold hanging drapes.
So he becomes this interior drape designer. He's this killing robot who becomes woke, and he goes and opens up a drapery store.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, other mean Terminators that have not woke start coming to the Earth. Now, in the original Terminator series, they were all trying to save John Conyers, who was going to save the world. In this one, John Conyers has been replaced with a Latina female who, oddly enough, looks like AOC.
Well, and, like I said, cultural divide, complete cultural divide.
And in the movie, they are trying to smuggle...
Is she a communist as well?
And they are smuggling their way across the Mexican border.
Yeah.
Where we see that Mexican border agents are putting people in cages. They're putting Mexicans in cages.
Yes.
And that they're also on the take for the cartels.
Mm-hmm.
And then a Terminator comes through and kills like 100 of them in 20 seconds.
The cartel or the
border agents?
The
border agents.
Well, the border agents. Well, yeah, well, that's very democratic. Or Democrats.
And then we come to the conclusion. We come to the conclusion that mankind is always out to destroy itself, but womankind is who really saves the planet.
What is this whole movement of, I mean, the feminists have turned into a whole different group now. They got all the guys, they got the woke movement, they got the Me Too movement, they got the You Are It movement. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And they just are convinced that the rest of America sees that and sympathizes with them.
Why would Arnold take a part playing a mass murdering drape hanging cyborg?
I mean, can tell you.
Money?
Yeah, simple.
Because let's say $20 million
there in age now. He's not looking like he used to look, and he's not the greatest actor in the world. But you know, money plays a big part in this. So, anything for a buck.
I don't understand why he does this.
You don't have to understand it. It's not important that you understand it.
It's for money. Oh, Chuck.
Exactly.
All right. Well, enough about Terminator.
So a lot of people, you know, let me take this one step further, and then we'll come to our guests because we need to do
this.
This
is, by the way, the dark fate of the entire Terminator franchise, I think.
So well, it's the dark fate of almost every franchise they have. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, Hollywood is pathetic. They haven't come out with anything that's been any good for years, unfortunately, because I really like movies.
I have to go hang curtains. I mean, geez, you know, the culture, drapery guy? Really?
The way they depict the culture is very much dependent on Europe. It's a European kind of plan. It's really what the Democrats want America to be. They want us to be more like Europe. They've wanted it for years and years and years. They want us to be more like France. They want us to be more like Germany. They want us to be more like anybody other than what we are. And it's a better move. So Hollywood is no different. Hollywood is so dependent on foreign sales that they will capitulate to foreign sales before they capitulate to America, even though they're American, you know, companies doing American work. They sell so much overseas. So they really have to follow what the socialist view of America is. So you still have that Obama capitulation that's alive and well in Hollywood today, and that's why they're so anti-Trump and anti-Republican and anti-freedom and anti-American and anti-everything else.
Now, by the way,
they're selling the world.
President Trump tortured Schwarzenegger about ruining The Apprentice.
And he did.
He destroyed that franchise.
Who is going to follow Trump in The Apprentice? I mean, they should have gotten some woman and really done it right.
Yeah, no, I mean, he ruined that franchise. But regardless, I've got to believe the president is going to come out now that he's become a killing, drape-hanging cyborg.
I can only imagine. Well, in all
interior
honesty,
decorating cyborg, really?
Now, let's face it. I don't know Arnold well. I know him a little bit. He's kind of like me. He's really not important anymore. I mean, there was a time when I had shows on and they were the number one shows, and I had all kinds of celebrity and all that kind of thing. Well, that's in the past for me now. Just like his movies and his stature is kind of in the past for him. So he's living in the past. So I don't think Trump needs to whack on Arnold. Arnold's whacked on himself enough.
I will tell you that, I mean, the Arnold I knew had a great sense of humor.
He's very funny. Not as funny as Stallone, but he's funny.
Right, but he did have a great sense of humor.
Well, you know as well as I do, the more left you go, look, let's be honest with each other. The farther left you move in your life, the less sense of humor you have. They're not funny anymore. These people aren't funny. They're miserable.
And I think that gets back to something we said before. I think for people to have funny, to really be funny, you need a certain lightheartedness.
Well, you need a certain reality, too, to be funny.
And you need to be able to
laugh
at yourself.
And they deny the fact that there's a reality. So you can't really comment on real things today because they're too funny.
But you need to be able to laugh at yourself, and you need a lightheartedness. And I don't think you can have a lighthearted mood and be funny when you're living in this angry state and this state of envy.
Exactly right. That's exactly correct. And that's why they're not funny anymore. Although
that's why we're funny. See, that's why we're funny.
And they're not. So, Mark, right. how are we going to, with our advertisers being terrorized by the left, which they are every day, how are we going to keep this thing on the air? I mean, this is expensive. You and I donate our time, and we donate the equipment, everything else. And yet, here we are trying to stay afloat, and we have, I don't know how many people we have following us. Do you? I mean, do you have any idea how many people we have listening to us weekly?
We have tens of thousands of people listening to us. Last month alone, we had probably close to 500,000 downloads, Chuck.
Really? Wow. Yes.
It's a lot of people. And a lot of people really love the program. But you are correct that our advertisers are being just bludgeoned by George Soros and his people over at MoveOn.org. So what you and I have decided to do is to make the program listener supported. So what we've done, folks, is we've joined a group called Patreon. And this is an opportunity for you who want to keep the show on the air to become a patron of Blunt Force Truth. And it simply works like this. You go to bluntforcetruth.com, you look up in the right-hand corner, and you'll see a button for Patreon. You open up a Patreon account, and then you can become a supporter. You can be $1 a month, $5 a month. You could be $1,000 a month if you were so moved. I don't know that anyone's actually going to do that, Chuck.
Well, I may do it.
You may do it. We've been doing it. Are you kidding? We've been doing it.
I know. We've been doing it. Yeah.
So the reality is, folks, we're not trying to raise any money for Chuck or for me. but we have, you know, 5-6 people working on staff to keep this program coming to you and all of the expenses that go with it. We need to cover that. And quite honestly, we're just getting tired of sitting with advertisers and trying to explain the truth to them, because they get inundated with emails from the MoveOn.org and these groups threatening to boycott products.
For 5 guys in a basement someplace posing as thousands. And it's just, it's upsetting. But, you know, we got to fight back. So we're depending on you to help us fight back. And we hope you will.
It's what the left does, Chuck. They want to crush the First Amendment. They want to crush voices like ours. And just, they want to make it so that there's only one side that anyone ever hears. And it's the socialist side. So if you are someone who wants to defend the First Amendment and not just keep this show afloat, but someone who says, I'm not going to allow the left to control all the narrative and all the voice in America, then become a patron. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, we would really appreciate your support, not only as listeners, but also monetarily. We appreciate it. And we'll pay you back as best we can.
Yes, we will. Well, Chuck, we're going to have a guest on today, and I don't know. I cannot vouch for whether this guest is funny or not. We're certainly not.
Well, we'll leave that up to him.
We're not going to talk about a funny topic, but you never know. He may be entertaining nonetheless. We're going to talk to Scott Tillman, and Scott is the National Field Director with the Liberty Initiative. And what we're really going to talk about is term limits, Chuck, something that you and I have wanted for 10-plus years.
Years.
And we're going to see where that action is happening, what we can do to make it happen. Scott, welcome to Blunt Force Truth.
Thank you very
welcome,
much.
Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks, Mark.
So let's kick off here. Where's the movement? Where are we at right now? First, let's start here, in fact. Does America want term limits now?
Overwhelmingly, Americans want term limits. I mean, the most recent polling that we've done on a nationwide basis has it up at 82%, and that's 82% in favor. If you look at the anti, it's not like there's 18% who oppose. It's like 9. There's just some people in there who, you know, don't like to make up their minds on issues. But for the most part, Democrat, Republican, Independent, they want change. They want term limits. They want some rotation in office. They want to put people back in control of their government.
So, Scott, not to make this a really short interview, but...
I agree. Thanks for being on. All right.
Who will determine whether we have term limits or not? Who is it up to?
Well, there's two groups that can make the decision. Well, one group in finality is the states will eventually have to ratify a term limits amendment. Now, back in the early 90s and even the late 80s, a lot of us can remember that term limits really had a lot of wind in the sails, and it was a very exciting issue. The Ross Perot, Reagan, different people, you know, talked about this when they were running for office before they got to their ultimate pinnacle positions. And
Didn't they have a vote on this in Congress?
They had a few votes on this in Congress. That's one of the things that people don't really understand is a lot of candidates ran in the early 90s promising term limits. And, you know, politicians, like you mentioned earlier, if their lips are moving, we know it's coming out. So a lot of politicians ran on the issue of term limits. But then once they get there, it's a lot like getting the chickens to vote for Colonel Sanders. You're getting to actually.
Exactly.
All right. He is funny now. See, he is funny.
Congress that passed. And it missed by one vote.
What they did was a little bit more finagling than that. They strategically broke it up into 3 or 4 votes so that if any one amendment had, you know, proposal had gotten its one vote, it would have been great. But instead, they split the vote so that a bunch of people could vote for 6 years, a bunch of people could vote for 12 years, a bunch of people could vote for 8 years. And they could all go home and say, look, I supported term limits. I even voted for it. Just not the term limits the other guys want. And then they said, and we're just we're done talking about it now. You know, it's an issue. We can't get it done, and we're going to be done talking about this. And the American people were not happy that that fast one was pulled over their eye. You know, the bait and switch. That was part of the contract with America back with Newt Gingrich.
That's exactly right. And, I remember that.
Then in the early 90s. And
Scott, wait a minute. Are you telling us that Congress lied to us?
Yes, it happened in the 90s. People might have forgotten, but back in the 90s, once upon a time, Congress lied to us, and people have not forgiven them since for that time. I can't attest to other issues where people might have been lied to or not, but we know for this for a fact, this one time that Congress was untruthful. A bunch of states took it upon themselves. 22 states passed term limits on their own representatives. People always think, well, they might like term limits on the other guy, but not our own guy. Well,
yeah, we have them here in Michigan. I help support them.
I'm in Michigan also, and yeah, I was supportive of it when I was in high school and have been involved with it since, and we do have them in Michigan, and people are very happy with them here.
I did not know you were here in Michigan. Where about?
Yeah, I'm in Grand Rapids.
That's where the workout came from Dan Hibman and Terry Lynn Land.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, I'm in Texas, and I love Greg Abbott. I want him to be governor forever.
So how do we get term limits on the House and Senate?
So the one way that we had tried was, of course, through state legislatures to term limit our own, and the Supreme Court said you couldn't do that, and they left us one option, and that's to go through Article 5 of the Constitution, which provides that either Congress will put out an amendment or the states can call for an amendment on term limits. So we're working both routes. If Congress, if we can get them to two-thirds, we work a pledge program where we pin them down. You know, you're going to support this one term limit so we don't get the Newt Gingrich, you know, bait and switch again. And the other way is we're working state by state through state legislatures. And when 34, which is two-thirds of the states, ask for an amendment on a certain thing, then Congress is legally bound to call a convention for that amendment. And right now we have 3 that are explicitly for term limits, 12 that include term limits, and a bunch that say we need a convention to discuss amendments that people want. So we're working on building up that number. When we get to 34, then Congress will be bound to call it. What we expect is Congress are kind of control freaks. They don't really want to let the states do things. We expect when we get to about 30, 31, that they're going to say, wait, this is too important.
We'll do it.
For the states to decide, we'll do it. And then I fully expect them to say, we're going to put on term limits, and we're just going to exempt anybody who's previously been elected to Congress. And if that's the game they want to play, I would take that today in a heartbeat, because then we can pick off the old timers one by one. The people who have been there and outlived their welcome, once we've got that situation and everybody realizes that we can get this done, then we can go after them.
It'll take us 40 years to purge them all.
You know, we've had a dingle in office since before the Nazis took over?
Yeah, we're heading toward 100 years.
Yeah.
We're on our way to 100 years of a dingle holding the 15th Congressional District here in Detroit.
Yeah, the only thing
hard to see the humor in that, and yet there seems to be humor there somewhere.
I know, it's the kind of humor that makes you want to bang your head against a wall.
John won that seat from his father, and he won the seat in 1955 and held it till what, 2 years ago?
He only won the seat in 55. He did hold it till he won it in 55. His dad had won it in the 30s.
Right.
And then he got married.
Right, now Debbie has it.
Debbie, and she's...
Well, Debbie's such a prize. I don't know how you could ever give her up.
You know, yeah. I got to tell you, I knew John.
Yeah?
John was actually a decent guy, but he was a different kind of Democrat. John was president of the NRA, the local chapter here in Michigan. That was a different kind of Democrat.
Why people want term limits so badly is because people change. The public at large changes, but politicians get elected and they tend to continue to represent what they originally ran on, and then they go native.
they go feral.
Yeah. For a long time, until the early, 20-teens, we had representatives in there who had gotten elected because of their stance on the Vietnam War. And younger people in the Democrat Party especially, but also people who want change in the Republican Party, understand that we need new people in, because the people you have there are not going to change. And over time, they've been bought by the lobbyists.
Now, wait a minute here. Before you run out on the Vietnam War, Joe Biden this weekend said that if he was elected president, he was going to take us back to the Vietnam War Accord.
No.
I'm not kidding. He said if he was elected, he was going to take us back to the Paris Peace Accord.
You know,
which was how we ended the Vietnam War. So Biden is still fighting the Vietnam War, like some of these guys in Congress you're talking about. I was going to say, you know Terry Lynn Land?
Yeah.
I think he's confused between global warming and the pirate. And the
I think so, yeah. He could also be involved in maybe some kind of pirate show. There's no telling.
Yeah, it's true.
But at any rate, I asked Terry when she was in her second term, really said we're very close friends, and I said, okay, do you still feel good about the term limits? You know, because she helped put them in. And she said, yeah, I really do. She goes, you know what? She goes, the first term that I was Secretary of State, I did a lot of great stuff. I really made the Secretary of State's office better. She goes, the second term really allowed me to follow through on the ideas that I came up with on the first term. And she goes, you know what? I'm out of ideas. It's time for somebody with new ideas to take this job.
We see this a lot, especially in the few states that don't have term limits on their governors, where when a governor gets into his third term, almost everybody realizes that they should have left before that. And normally it ends up costing their party a lot of power just because people are so fed up with, they might go into it thinking, well, this has been good for two terms and we'll give them another shot. But rarely do we look at where people are seeing and saying, wow, this is great. We need it for a lot longer. And it normally ends up costing their party a little bit. We saw this in Wisconsin. We're seeing this in Idaho right now, some different places where this is an issue. I got a lot of friends who are big on the issue of term limits. And one friend here in West Michigan, Walker, who they just passed their term limits, Rich, he always says, if you support term limits, or if you supported Barack Obama, or if you supported Ronald Reagan, great. But for one of those two guys, you're really, really happy that there were term limits and they left, because they both could have won again and it probably wouldn't have been a great new thing where they're just expanding on their hope and change and new ideas. You know, there's a shelf life and you got to get in. There's got to be something to light a fire under people to get their agenda done. And without term limits, politicians, we were talking a minute ago about how they lie. They keep lying over and over and over again. But here in Michigan, where we have term limits, and in states where they have term limits, and in places where the governors are term limited, they go in, and what's their legacy going to be? You need to get on the shtick and get it done, because are you going to go home and tell everybody, yeah, I was governor, and nobody really remembers what got done, like somebody in California here a few years ago? Or are you going to go in and say, when I was president, or when I was governor, or when I was in the legislature, we got this done. This is our big accomplishment. It really lights a fire under them. And right now in the House and the Senate and the U.S. Congress, they make more money by not solving, for example, the immigration problem, the trade problem, other issues. They make more money going out and fundraising to their base, fundraising to big mega donors on those issues, than they would ever make if they solve it. I mean, if they came up with a workable immigration solution, how are they going to go scare people about kids in cages? And how are they going to scare people about open borders and drugs and stuff coming through? There's no win when they can keep campaign after campaign after campaign coming back with these same problems. You put term limits on it, and are you just going to be the guy who went and complained and ranted about the issue for 6 years? Or are you going to be the guy who went and got something done? Because, you know, they look
what you've managed to do, Scott, is describe why the deep state hates Trump. He wants to solve those problems, and they right. don't want them solved.
Yeah, they want it to continue on like it has been. There's a lot of power for people who are there and stay there for a long time, and they can manipulate things to their own ends, and it's not the ends that the American people want. And that is why I think we see this pushback against the president right now.
So let me give you some pushback on term limits.
Yeah.
So if we go to Congress and we were to talk to congressmen, they're going to say, they're going to give you excuses like, well, if we get somebody in the House and they're talented and they're great, why would we want to lose them? Because now we're going to end up with a House and a Senate with no experience. What would your answer be to that?
We can look right now and see what a lot of experience gets us. We have a higher national debt, higher deficit than we've ever. I mean, I love when people bring this particular one up, especially people who are being serious about it and that are in power. Well, what would we get if, you know, I mean, look at what we have now. We have endless war. We have debt that, I mean, it was going back to George Bush and Dick Cheney when they said deficits don't matter anymore. And every Congress and president since took that to heart. You know, these things do matter. There are plenty of people who are nearing retirement age who in the last few years have realized that they just, you know, they need to put some money aside and they need to be, have been responsible. Well, a country needs to operate in a similar way. They're running the country into the ground. They're getting us into a lot of different trouble on a lot of different fronts, and they're just refusing to solve the problems. They have more luck going out there.
Well, let me ask you a question, Scott.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. How many trillion will it take for us to finally fail? We're already 22 trillion in debt. How many trillions are where we're over the cliff and there's no recovery?
Well, that's the magic question, that if somebody had the answer to that, I suppose we would, and it was demonstrable, then we would, you know, be taking some steps against it. But it's one of those things that Congress gets away with, and they can always count on somebody else to be left holding the bag down the road. We know in states that have term loans, they've actually taken some steps to be more fiscally responsible. If you look at pension systems around the country, they've been in the last 20 years in a lot of different states running into these pension crises. But in states like Michigan with term limits, we switched over to a defined contribution pension system rather than a defined benefit pension system for almost all of our different state agencies and employees, which is something sustainable. In other places like Illinois, they're still digging the hole. Another thing in Michigan, we have, you know, the shortest term length in the country. And a few years ago, we had a scandal where two state reps had an affair. What happened? Their staffers didn't stand up and defend them because their staffers knew that 4 years down the road, even if these people are still here, I'm not going to be dependent on them. Or even if, you know, I covered for them, it's not going to help me with my job 4 years from now. In states like New York and Illinois, they have scandals that go on for decades and cost billions and billions of dollars because the people who would be in the know, who would see that, the staffers, their localized deep state and whatnot that is kind of seen the behind the scenes, they're not going to speak out against it. Their job is dependent on them going along to get along. There's a lot of cover-ups and different things like that. And I'm not saying you don't have corruption in states with term limits, but I am saying that you find it out a lot quicker, because why would you go out on a limb for somebody who's not going to be there in 6 years?
Now, Chuck, to answer one of your questions as far as when is too much on a national debt, the only thing we can look to right now mathematically is we can look to Japan. Japan currently has a national debt that I think is about 2.5 times their gross domestic product, and their economy is still moving. So if we were to use that as a basis, it would make you think that we could go to at least 50 trillion and still not run off the cliff. But nobody really knows for sure. Let me go back to Scott with another question. I'm giving you the arguments against term limits. In Congress, we have an election every 2 years. Isn't that a form of term limits? Don't we have term limits?
We don't. Incumbents win re-election 90% of the time. And that's, you know, in a wave year where there's a huge turnover, then it gets down to about, you know, 90%. Otherwise, it's much higher than 90% of the time that they're winning re-election. And if you want to challenge an incumbent for office, to be a credible challenger, you need almost $2.5 million. That's just to be a credible challenger. That's not how much it takes to win. We did.
So $2.5 million is the average for a congressional race now.
To be a credible challenger against an incumbent. But that's, there's a lot of stuff that isn't necessarily clear. One thing I do a lot of at U.S. Term Limits is we look at a lot of campaign finance data for states. And, you know, we can look at different states and see what happens. And sometimes it shows a better image than when we look at Congress, because there's a lot of money goes into to national races and things like that. But I was looking at Colorado, and I was, which has term limits, and I was looking at Alabama and Texas. And in Colorado, a lot of money gets spent on races, and, you know, people jump in and they put a lot of their own money in, and it gets very knockdown, drag out. And then I looked at Alabama, and these races were going for incredibly cheap. You know, we're talking for a state house race in Alabama, people were spending, you know, 10, 12, 20 grand they were raising over the course of a cycle. And it looked like it was really cheap. And I'm thinking, why don't more people jump in to challenge them? And then all of a sudden I saw an incumbent who raised 40,000 one month, 40,000 the next month. For the past 6 years before that, he had only raised, you know, $12,000 a cycle. And I looked to see what happened. He drew a challenger. Somebody said, well, it's only costing $12,000 to run for this race. I'll jump in and challenge this guy. And what did he do? He picked up the phone, called all the lobbyists in the state. Well, of course, they're going to give him money because he's voting on laws that affect them on a daily basis. Raised $40,000 one month and $40,000 the next month. And it just, it you know, it changed it up. The other thing we see,
you know, it's very funny. The last time I had this argument, it really wasn't an argument, it was a disagreement. But I had this disagreement with Sean Hannity on his show. And I was for term limits, he was not. And since then, I have not been invited back on Sean Hannity's show. But he has changed his position.
Oh, yeah? Good.
Yeah, he's now for term limits. Nobody talks about it much anymore. It's really
well,
true.
Sean is supporting Mark Levin's movement for a constitutional convention.
Well, that's right. And they've got 12 states now that they've got passed, and their resolutions do include term limits. They're pushing the same way that we are. We know that for the most part, the chickens aren't going to vote for Colonel Sanders, which means we need state legislators to vote for term limits. So we appeal to state legislators who, as a rule, you know, they don't particularly like when you start talking about term limits because they get all thinking, if you're talking about it for them, maybe you'll start talking about it for us. We appeal to state legislators by saying, if those seats open up, you'd be in a perfect position to run for them. And that is,
you know, this is one of those issues that has evolved since the writing of the Constitution. Mark knows as well as I. In fact, he pointed it out to me that it was in the original articles of the Constitution. They considered this, and they decided not to do it because it was travel, everything. It was just too difficult to deal with, and they figured nobody would stay in business because we were citizen legislators. And these citizens would have to go out and make a living and everything else. Well, now they found out they could make a living in Congress. They don't have to go back to their jobs. They don't have to go back to their community. That has changed. That's one of the things that's really evolved that they could have taken care of in the beginning of the country, but they didn't because of
that in the obvious thing. Yeah, you're exactly right.
So Levin's group has 12 states. How many states do you have in U.S. term limits organization?
We have three that are exclusive for term limits. So they have 12 total. We have three that are exclusive for term limits because we have some supporters that want to focus just on the single issue. And that's why we're going that route. Back to what Chuck had mentioned, things did change. You know, when they originally wrote the Constitution, Washington was a miserable place. Lots of mosquitoes, miserable in the summertime. Nobody wanted to be there for the
still a miserable place full of snakes instead of mosquitoes.
Right. And what happened was they gave themselves staffs and we invented air conditioning. So you essentially, the deep state has kind of ushered in this time where people want to stay there for a real long time. You know, they gave themselves these staffs and they grew the government and started all these agencies and whatnot. And that has led to, you know, Congress deciding they want to stay there. They see it as a way to feather their nests, and, you know, power is, power draws people.
So this whole
is
caused by Willard Carrier.
Right on the Carrier's
feet. Yeah, Willard Carrier caused this entire mess when he invented air conditioning.
A big part of it.
I personally think we should go back to the old days where, what was that French penal colony they used to send everybody to? It was in the middle of the ocean. What was it called?
Elba?
Anybody?
Not sure.
Where Papillon was filmed. I think that's where Congress should be. And they want to get off. They can't swim to get off because the sharks will get them. They're on an island. It's miserable. There's no heating or air conditioning.
Yeah, Alcatraz would work.
Try to work it out. What?
Alcatraz would work.
Well, not really. That's too close to San Francisco.
I think we would have a better House and Senate if we drafted 535 people the way that we pick jurors.
I think you're absolutely right.
I mean, I literally just randomly pick 535 people and say, you get 2 years, go home. We're going to pick 535 more.
You'd get kind of like picking a jury pool, right?
Yes. I think we would have a better Congress. My God, how many members are lawyers? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know offhand.
All of them?
We used to know back in, I mean, it's overwhelmingly made up of attorneys. The other thing is we send everybody down to Washington, D.C., and what does that do? That takes them away from their district, and it puts them in one spot for the lobbyists. I mean, make them vote for their district. Make them sit at home and make the lobbyist companies hire people to go sit in 50 states or, you know, 435 districts and try to convince people.
Well, that's an interesting
concept. Well, obviously, these changes are not the changes that are going to be made. So the fundamental changes that need to be made is that there's so many years for you as a congressman, there's so many years for you as a senator, and then you go home. And you live with the rules that you pass, you live with the laws that you pass, and like it or not, that's how your rest of your life is going to be. And of course, they don't live like that because they don't have to.
No, and most of them never go back when they're done. This is one of the things we talk about. What is the best term limit for people? We support two Senate term and three House term limit. And that's because the citizens at large want that. They think that once you're gone from home more than 6 years, you're very unlikely to come back to the profession you did before. You know, if you stepped away from teaching or, you know, being a doctor or your personal business for more than 6 years, it's very hard to get back. It's hard enough to get back after 6 years. But for longer than that,
you think Trump is going to move his residence to Washington? Do you think he's going to set up shop and just say, well, we're all going to go live in Washington now? Obama did that. He moved from Chicago. He now lives in Washington.
Right.
So Trump moves to Florida to avoid taxes. And everybody hates you for it.
Well, the nice part about
billions of dollars in taxes.
About term limits is, you know, right now there's very few congressmen who move out into the private sector, and then a lot of them do go to lobbyist jobs, and a lot of them stay in Washington. But
they stay in Washington, where their bread is buttered.
Right. Once you put term limits,
they make a lot more money.
Everybody remembers high school when you went back to homecoming the first year after high school. Everybody knew you. It was great. You were a great guy. But once you're 4 years out, you know, then nobody knows you anymore. We'll do the same thing with Congress. Once we get term limits on, there'll be so many of them coming back around. We'll flood the market with ex-congressmen, and their value as lobbyists and, you know, value to the deep state will go down, you know, very, very quickly.
That's a really good point, because they'd be a commodity now.
People hire them.
So how do we get – so first off, Levin's group has got a dozen states. You've got three. Can we get cooperation between these two groups to try to combine those?
Well – ours are specific for term limits. There's our term limits and other things. So we do, with activists on the ground, we work very much together. Our activists are very often helping those, you know, the Convention of States groups, and the Convention of States activists are very often at our meetings going to things like that. It's one of the, this particular issue, and for both of these movements, these are things where we need a lot of popular support on the ground. And rather than trying to draw everybody under one tent, it helps to have people out there working on different things. One thing we know is term limits resonates with both the right and the left. You know, for Democrats, the support is in the high 60s, and it's just polls overwhelmingly. But when you get activists on the right and the left together in the same room, they really don't work well together. And it, so by having more groups, we actually, over the years, we figured this out. We get further with more groups than we do trying to bring everybody together on one particular issue. Or in one particular organization.
How do we get more states?
You can't bring the American people together to agree on anything. Isn't that what everybody in who's running for president said they're going to do? They're going to bring the country together. No, they're not.
It's
they
Trump's
never
fault.
Do.
It's Trump's fault. He's dividing the company, the country. He's a great divider.
Of course he is. Yeah, we've never been divided before.
How do we get more states to jump on board here? And is there a time period that we have to accomplish this in?
There's not a limited time period to accomplish this other than, you know, eventually we're going to run out of dollars to add, you know, eventually we'll hit, what is that limit? How many trillions? And we need to do it before we get to that point, I sincerely hope. But we have a plan that would get us there in the next 5 to 7 years very aggressively. We're working state by state. And what we need to do is in different states, if people are interested and want to get involved and help, we need the help. And we need the help in your states. Nothing makes a bigger
difference. You say people, what are you talking about? I mean, obviously politicians aren't interested in this. It's their job.
So the people who need to talk to the politicians are the constituents, and we need the help from the constituents in the districts, because there's, you know, we can come in and talk, but everybody says you're some big outside lobbying group. We're not really lobbyists. We're more people who have gotten involved in it. I mean, there's no payout being in favor of kicking politicians in office like there is keeping them in office.
Right.
But we need people who are in the district to come and talk to and tell their representatives that they support this issue. That goes further than anything else is hearing from constituents and having those constituents show up and do it. If I could have a dozen people rotate standing in front of their congressman's local office, you know, for the next 5 years, I think in 2 years we'd have term limits passed. If they were out there with signs saying we want term limits and had somebody there every day, it would make a huge difference. Just being out there. There are setbacks though that we've experienced, like the Supreme Court shooting us down on the state by state effort that we were doing in the 90s, and other things that in the, you know, the Newt Gingrich, the one time politicians have lied to us back in the 90s, contrary to America, those setbacks get people discouraged. And also, we live in a really great country. And people have families and they have work and they have other passions that they're working on. So many hands makes light work. And if more people can get involved and contact us and reach out, we will put everybody on the same page. So we're all working toward it, and you won't have to get into an argument with the person from the other side of the aisle that you don't particularly like. We can put you in touch with people who think like you do politically and are there for the same reasons.
So one of the things the Democrats are really good at is community organizing.
Yes.
Not for the good of America, but for the good of whatever, the Democrats.
The community.
But it is a way to figure out how to do this by community organizing, isn't it?
I mean,
to use their own playbook against them?
And that's what we're working on. In the states that we've passed, it's for the most part on-the-ground community organizing, finding and networking with the people who are there, who will show up, doing the organizing and putting their organization, those people, to productive ends. We direct people, because it's one thing if you're interested in this issue and you don't know where to start, you don't know how to get involved, you don't know what it will take to get us there. We know what it will take to get us there. We know where you can do stuff that will be productive, that will show you results, and we can help people with that guidance, and we welcome all the help.
So do we have to pass an actual bill in each house, each state House of Representatives? Do we need to get a bill passed by them saying that they want national term limits?
Yes. The way the process works in Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution says when 2/3 of the states call for this issue, then Congress is bound. So that's done by what are called resolutions, which is a similar thing to a bill. Bills normally require a governor to sign. Resolutions do not. So a House and a Senate, and in the case of Nebraska, just the Senate, passes a resolution, and then that goes, and we call it aggregating. It matches up with the other ones. Then they're, at the state, they send the paperwork up to the feds. And when we get to the point where there are 34, then Congress will be bound. Of course, as we get closer to that, there'll be a lot more attention. But essentially,
it's really funny, Scott. Excuse me for interrupting, but it's very funny. And I think it's funny, oddly enough, that everything in order to change requires so much work. And it's so complicated on the part of the American people. They have to be willing to do it. They have to be willing to spend their time. They have to be willing to invest their lives in this. And do you really think they are?
Do I think
really
they
willing,
are willing?
Really willing to stand with signs? I mean, I know Democrats are, but they find homeless people to do it. But do you really think regular people are willing to stand in the gap and try to accomplish this? I would hope they would be, but I wonder.
I think that they are. I think that there are certain things that are happening on a national level, especially with the deficit spending, that distracts people from things. I mean, as long as everything is happy and good and you don't watch your 401k drop by half its value over the course of a week like we did in 2008, then everybody kind of goes and does their own thing. But when we saw that happen in 2008, especially when there was a crisis, people took to the streets. And then after the Tea Party took to the streets, Occupy Wall Street took to the streets. And those were people who were very much frustrated about the same underlying issues that Congress has essentially been bought off and that there's no accountability. A lot of the people at the Tea Party meetings in 2008 and 2009 that I met with and saw were very angry that there was a huge bailout for banks. And
by the way, Scott, let me ask you something. You're involved in this stuff every day. Where is the Tea Party? What happened to it?
Well, that goes back to this. When the crisis hits, people tend to show up. But otherwise, as a rule, Americans are fat and happy, and we go home and we do our own thing. We're not a group of people who want government overly involved in our lives. We want
people. You know that when we're fat and happy is when all this other junk that's meaningless comes out and people start advocating for things that don't matter to them. It doesn't matter to anybody. They start nitpicking around the edges because people are fat and happy. Just the minute they get in trouble, everybody turns out.
Yeah, and there's a group of people out there on all sides of the political aisle that can make their living off the taxpayer and can make their living off, using the law. I don't want to single out trial lawyers, but let's call them trialers who can give themselves financial benefit, and who, you know, people are at the trough, and then there's people who are in power at the deep state. And when everybody else is out doing their thing and, you know, working in productive means and, you know, finding ways to grow the economy and do those things, they're looking for ways to dip their beak. And we need, you know, there will be a crisis and people will push back against that. Then it's important that we can, you know, be there and show people this is a solution that will help. Term limits will, you know, take power away from those people who, you know, from Congress, you know, it will put, you know, a more responsive Congress in power who will actually address these issues.
Will it make the bureaucrats more powerful if the elected officials are rotating more?
That's a very interesting question, Mark.
Yeah, a lot of people say it's going to make the bureaucrats and the lobbyists more powerful, but we know for a fact it doesn't make the lobbyists more powerful because they hate it and oppose it. And what essentially it does is breaks up relationships. So the question becomes, will breaking up relationships with bureaucrats make bureaucrats more powerful? Because there's this idea that, you know, they're the ones who are there for a long time, they're behind the scenes. And when we look at states that have term limits, we look at cities that have term limits, we know that it breaks up those the power of the bureaucracies. For one thing, the bureaucracy comes in because they're hired by or appointed by the politicians. That's where they come from. You know, somebody might work in a department their whole life, but before they become the head of that department, they're getting appointed to that position. You know, we've had a ton of cabinet appointments with, you know, it's a new thing. Every time we have a new president, we hear about all the different cabinet appointments, but those people are picked from the people who normally work in that agency or have some background in that area or picked from Congress and whatnot. But we know that term limits breaks up relationships with insiders. It breaks up those relationships with the bureaucrats, and it breaks up those relationships with the lobbyists. Right now, the bureaucrats, their kids are going, you know, to the politicians' kids' birthday parties, and they're all getting friendly. And those relationships are strengthened, and Congress doesn't make any laws that goes against them because those relationships are so strong. Congress will not push back against the bureaucracy when they're tied as tightly to them as they are today. It will depend on
everybody. Almost everyone that Trump has picked in his inner circle that came from the deep state, and there were lots of them, none of them worked out.
No, they haven't.
None of them served him. And of course, he was criticized for firing them. But quite frankly, they weren't interested in doing his bidding. They were interested in doing the bidding of the deep state from which he hired them. And now they're gone. And they're going, and every day that goes by, he gets rid of another one.
I think you can look and see that it's a good example of, you know, bringing in somebody new, especially who's not part of the existing system. I mean, the deep state has essentially lost their mind. And we can see it every day in the news, whistleblowers, other leaks, everything else that's going on, they've lost their minds. I think that's a pretty strong.
You know, someone pointed something out, and since you mentioned it, let me say this and see if you agree. The whistleblower is totally not a whistleblower. He's a leaker. And to prove this, that he has no right to anonymity, I heard this the other day, and I thought this is very interesting. He broke protocol by going first to Schiff. He should have gone through the IG, then to Schiff. And by letting the IG off, not going on that route, he could have gone to Schiff or anybody else, but he had to go to the IG first, and he did not do that. Schiff's people directed him back to the IG. Consequently, he doesn't deserve anonymity or the right to call himself a whistleblower. Would you agree with that?
I can't speak to that issue. I don't have enough background on it. I haven't followed that issue well enough. I don't know enough about it.
Well, could you find someone who does? Because I want to talk to him.
What states do we have so far?
We have Florida, Alabama, and Missouri.
And what about Levin's group? Do you have any idea what they have?
They have 12. It's, of course, I'm pretty sure that we've got the same. They've got the same three, and then I don't have the list in front of me, and I don't want to misspeak on that one.
But so Michigan is not in the group.
Michigan is not in the group yet, and I know that we both are trying to push legislation this particular cycle.
What's our biggest roadblock?
Michigan term limits kind of gives politicians in Michigan some pushback against term limits. The other thing in Michigan that's pushback, especially for the COS group, but also bleeds over into us, is Michigan has a very close number between the House and of Democrats and Republicans. It's kind of split. I mean, there is a Republican majority, but what happens is because it's so close, there's not an overwhelming majority. And right now, with the way politics is, there's not going to be any bleed over. They don't want us to be seen doing anything that could be interpreted as helping the opposition party. So aside from the part that a few legislators don't like it, they're able to successfully say, well, this is a Republican issue or this is a Democratic issue, or just don't help the Republicans, even if you would otherwise be in support of this issue. And they get a lot stopped that way.
Are Republicans more likely to approve this than a Democrat?
That seems to be the case.
I am not shocked by that. Are you, Chuck?
No, I'm not. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
And by the way, let me say something. On our last episode, I want to point something out. You said on our last episode, you were pointing out that there is a gap between the values and the credibility of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that would justify that your comment, it would be that if more Republicans are willing to put themselves out of power than Democrats, that should say a lot to people about where these parties' heads are.
Well, look, I guess any politician's about power, frankly, when you boil down to it. What did one of our founding fathers say about anybody who was going to run for office? I can't recall the quote, but it was, you know, not a good thing, because it really involves power. No one wants to give up their power, Republican or Democrat. I can see that. I understand that. That's just nature. That's a natural thing. But Washington, as far as I'm concerned, has got to be taken off the position of they're working for Washington all the time in the guise of working for the people, and they're really not working for the good of the American people. And people really need to wake up and understand that these people are in business for themselves. They are narcissistic, they are self-serving, and they are not doing the job that we hired them to do when we put them in Congress. So until people kind of come to that understanding and conclusion of what they can do about it, I guess we'll always be here in this dilemma.
Well, this is...
That was just to lift everybody's spirits on the way out.
you're exactly right that something needs to happen. It's not a Republican-Democrat issue necessarily, because we see that once they get elected, I mean, the Wall Street firms are donating to both sides. Big Pharma is right. Donating to both sides. The healthcare companies are donating to both sides. And we know that people on the right want more freedom in healthcare, and we know that people on the left want a single-payer healthcare. But when we look at what either party has passed recently, all they do is pass things that put more insurance companies in the mix. And pretty much everybody can agree that insurance companies are probably the biggest headache for the consumer. Why would people who are supposed to be representing the consumer be putting more of a headache out there for the consumer? Well, those are the people who are donating the most money to those campaigns. And it's on the left and right. You know, when they passed the Affordable Care Act, which is often called in the right Obamacare, I mean, you would think that they would want to take insurance companies out of the mix. But what do? Is they essentially wrote insurance companies more into the law than they had been previously. And at the same point, when
they said about the Affordable Care Act, it wasn't affordable. They didn't care, and it was only an act.
Right, absolutely. And it gave insurance companies more power and more control, and made sure that they would be there to wet their beaks. And it didn't help anybody. It didn't make anybody on either side happy. It made the situation worse, a situation that was already, you know, in the process of getting worse. It made it accelerate how fast those premiums go up, and how much more insulated the providers are, and the people who should be responsive are from the people who would be otherwise encouraging them to make changes.
So, Scott, how do people get involved?
Go to termlimits.com. Google Term Limits, U.S. Term Limits will be your first Google result. Find us on Facebook. Find us at Twitter, hashtag Term Limits on Twitter. If you put in U.S. Term Limits on Facebook, you're going to find us. Look for our logo. It says U.S. Term Limits. There's a few Term Limits groups out there. I believe many hands makes light work, so you should join all of them. But of course, put us at the top of your list. And then if you reach out to us, we will get in touch with you and we will find ways to work together.
You need to build an army.
Yes, we do.
Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your positions with our listeners. We really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can find us on Twitter, on Stitcher, or not on Twitter, on Stitcher, on iTunes, and
Podcast One.
And we really appreciate you being part of our lives today and allowing us to be part of yours. Thanks for listening to Blunt Force Truth, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.